This is the Rebellious Wellness Over 50 podcast. I'm Greg Cox, your host, and I believe it's time to bust the myth that aging equals decline or irrelevance. Nonsense. Aging happens, but it doesn't have to ruin your life. Each week, you'll hear experts who think and practice outside the box of conventional wisdom on how to age in good health so you can live fully expressed. I'm here to bust myths, help you embrace change, and live life your way. If you feel like the best of life has passed, it's time to get a little rebellious in your approach. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Rebellious Wellness Over 50. Today, my guest is Sanan Petrovic.
Petrovic.
And we're going to talk about recognizing toxic relationships and the role that we play in that relationship. And it's complicated. And if you are in a relationship that you feel could be toxic, or you're with a narcissist, maybe you are a narcissist and you'd like to get better, Sanan is going to walk us through the journeys on all fronts. So thank you for being here, Sanan, and welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So I wanted to have you here because I have a feeling, you know, we're surrounded, the global news is full of toxicity, whether it's leaders who seem to be narcissistic or toxic in other ways. And more on social media, because we have so much social media, more stories are being told about people that escaped certain relationships. And then, so I think that that might reflect the microcosm of us. And I know that there are people at any age, but in my demographic, in their 60s, they may have been in this kind of relationship for a really long time and are tired of it. But maybe it can be fixed, or maybe it can't. And I know we talked for a minute before we got on. Women tend to blame themselves for anything that's going on and try to fix it. So tell us who we have to be to discover, A, if it's something place we should leave. B, let's talk about what does constitute a toxic relationship.
In a nutshell, we have to be our whole selves. Mm. We have to show up with our thoughts, our feelings, our wants, and our needs on board. And we have to show up like that in the beginning of the relationship. For most of us, we didn't in the beginning because we were trained to be placators and peacekeepers. And we got lots of kudos for all that. And so we lined up behind all that and we created relationships which were very one-sided. So sometimes we have a whole story and narrative around a relationship that's based on the way we showed up initially. And maybe that's not exactly accurate. So I've had clients before where they had a definitely toxic relationship where they were not respected. They felt like the doormat and they were treated like a doormat. But when they showed up fully and said, I will not let you treat me this way anymore, there were actual changes in the relationships in their lives, including spouses, including adult children. So I think we have to give ourselves the opportunity to really fully show up and then see what happens. If the person gets worse, obviously you've got your answer. Mm-hmm. If the person improves and is intrigued and is happy to meet all of you, then it's different. And so we have to learn, first of all, to change the toxic relationship we may have in our own heads. Mm. So for most of us, we grew up probably with a lot of negativity. I know I did. When one of my first relationships with a therapist was in the Boston area, actually, over on the East Coast. And she said, I want you to, for this week, write down all the times you say something terrible inside your head about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that sounds dumb. So I tried to do it. And pretty soon it was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. Mm. And now that I have been a therapist for 35 years, I often tell people to do this, or at least to talk about the self-judgmental statements that you're pouring out on yourself all the time. And then we talk about whose voice is that? Mm. People say, well, it's mine. Well, do you talk to anybody else in your life that way? Well, no, I would never. Then it's not your voice.
Right.
So
yeah, we get the messages from other people too, right? Growing up. And we may have seen a toxic relationship in our own homes.
Yeah, exactly. And it has to do with the role that we take on in order to survive whatever we grew up with. Mm-hmm. So it isn't that someone necessarily said, you have to do this or that. It's what we figured out that helps us survive that situation. And so you have to kind of at the same time pat yourself on the back for surviving the situation because you're here now. And then also take a step back from it and say, it's not healthy anymore for me to go into a relationship as the fixer, the placator, the peacekeeper, the holder of all the emotions. That's just not healthy.
Right.
So when we start to then show up with all our thoughts, all our feelings, all our wants and needs on board and able to express ourselves, then we get to see what the relationship is really all about.
And I want to bring in that this isn't just a relationship amongst spouse or partners. It could be family members. It could be
for
adult
sure.
children. I don't even want to go to coworkers and stuff because that's a little bit of a different, you don't have much control over people at your workplace. But let's talk a little bit about adult children too. Many of us have adult children, very adult, 30s, 40s, maybe 20s, mm-hmm. not living with us. Well, maybe the 20s are still boomeranged back, but there's friction. There's somebody is in the lesser role. And that sounds trickier to navigate to me. It sounds pretty tricky to have adult children that maybe growing up, you were the one who did everything for them and now they expect it. I don't know. Give me a few examples of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Typically, they have watched you be the doormat, if that was your role, and the peacekeeper and placator, and you took care of everything, and the, you know, that you fawned over them and that you adored them and the sun rose and set on their hineys and all that stuff that we do as moms. And then they keep showing up that way in your life. And as you mature, you have to recognize that's also a toxic relationship. And when you show up fully in that relationship, do they get worse or do they get better? And oftentimes there's a blow up initially when I've had clients who've shown up differently and the young adult will be like ballistic. How could you dare show up and have needs and have thoughts and have feelings that are different from mine? And then there's sort of a stepping back and a reassessment. Sometimes there's a little bit of estrangement and I call them a grown-up timeout. Like it's okay to hang up the phone and say, we can talk later when you're calm and when you're not spouting these toxicities at me, or I'll come over another time. Mm-hmm. And when you do that over time, you're teaching them that you're no longer in that role. And then you get to see what happens because if they've watched that between you and your spouse, or you and the world, then they are set up to believe that that's who you expect to be and that's how you expect others to treat you. So you have to set the record straight and give them the benefit of the doubt. I've definitely heard way too many cases where therapists will actually encourage a young adult to cut off their parent and become totally estranged from them. And even, you know, to cut off an adult child. But I think we have to fully show up first. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that relationship might be very toxic right now. But when you show up, what happens?
And let's talk about the degrees of toxicity, because I know that narcissism is one of your things. And relationships with a narcissist can be incredibly slippery because they are chameleon-like. Mm-hmm. And that sounds different to me than, well, mom was the doormat or dad was the power figure and mom was subservient. Like that's a little bit different. Now you're in a relationship feeling co-equal and then you realize you're not because that personality always gets bigger. So talk a little bit about how a narcissistic relationship looks. And I'm hearing that you have to still show up as your whole self, but courage, man, there's a lot of courage for all these things that you have to be.
It is. It's really tricky. And I think narcissism exists on a spectrum like anything else. We didn't used to talk about narcissism. My first job out of college was at a battered women's shelter, and we never talked about narcissism. But obviously, most of the women that were coming out of those relationships were talking about narcissism. We just didn't use that label. And that label gets weaponized and turned around on you, so we have to be careful. But the essence is that they are completely emotionally, their sense of self is empty. and they're like a hot air balloon. So if you stop puffing air into them and puffing them up and bolstering them and supporting them, then they implode and then they explode. And they, each person does it differently. You know, you can have the more histrionic type that, and people will call them the coverts, who are more like implosive, and they will spin out into tears and suicidal ideation. And the other extreme is, you know, violence and aggression. But the implosion is trickier for people to recognize, because it's what Pia Melody talked about as attacking from victim stance. Mm-hmm. So it's like this martyristic thing where they twist things around and make you feel so guilty and responsible for their emotions that then they have you wrapped around them again. And then again, your thoughts, feelings, wants, and needs don't matter, because theirs are what matters in this relationship. Yours don't, period. So it's very slippery and very tricky. And I think that's harder to, in a sense, escape from emotionally, because they are so good at throwing out a different hook. So I talk about the hooks as, you know, if you've ever been to a Bass Pro Shop with the thousands of hooks and lures on the wall, that's kind of like a narcissist's brain. Yeah. They got so many choices. And if the guilt trip works, cool, they keep using that. And if that stops working, they'll kind of escalate into a little bit of anger or a little bit of tears. And if that, none of that's working, then they go full blown tears or anger, both.
And then remorse. So, you know, let me buy you flowers, or, you know, here's a card. I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again. Those I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again phrases are sort of a red flag, I would say. If you hear repeatedly, I won't ever do this again. Or exactly. The other favorite phrase of mine, which I'm sure I used for many years before I got into coaching and personal development, was, you make me feel. You're winding me up. Why are you doing this to me? And I'm now having a bad day. It's just cheating. You can't make somebody feel one way or another. They can allow themselves. I mean, somebody could poke somebody, like, intentionally,
right?
You know, say things that will make them, knowing that they'll get upset. But just in general, when if somebody's emotional and they're like, you did this to me, you make me feel, not really.
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, you're the psychiatrist.
No, that's true. And that's one of the most important pieces, is that you are responsible for your thoughts, feelings, wants, and needs, and you're not responsible for theirs. Mm-hmm. So I typically see women who do all the heavy lifting, emotionally speaking, in the relationship, and they have a really hard time letting go of that and recognizing that person's emotions are their choices. Mm-hmm. And that you can't get so enmeshed in that relationship that you take responsibility for their choices, their emotions, their moods, everything. Mm-hmm. Because then you start to live on a constant fight or flight or freeze mode, because you're constantly stressing yourself. They're stressing you with their behavior. You're also stressing yourself with the expectation that you can fix their behavior. So you're living in this constant fight, flight, or freeze, and your rational mind goes offline, and then you feel like you're crazy.
Gaslighting.
Mm-hmm.
And walking on eggshells. I love that phrase, because it really feels, or Legos. Let's bring it into the modern era. Walking on Legos.
Walking on Legos. That's awesome.
That feeling that I might do something wrong. And ordinarily, it wouldn't be wrong in your mind. You wouldn't think, like, oh, I was so tired, I didn't take out the garbage last night.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, there's a big brouhaha about it.
Right.
I sound like somebody with experience. I did have an experience of this. And so let's talk about, the relationship isn't going to get better. The person shows up as all of themselves, and the other person is ballistic. It's crazy. There's no hope for this relationship. Now we're talking serious courage. Do you help women transition out of something that can't be fixed?
Absolutely. And that's, you're right, it's very difficult. Because what's happened over time is that you've been trained to focus wholly on that person, right? And so you're noticing their emotions, their thoughts, their wants, their needs. You forgot all about your own. And you literally have ceased to exist in a lot of ways. And it's absolutely crazy making. And so when a person first leaves, they will typically feel incredibly empty, incredibly anxious, incredibly depressed, and they will spiral and oftentimes go back, yeah. or try to hook them back in. If they've been discarded, they will frantically try to get back with them. So it's a very, very dangerous time, very high risk for them returning. And then everybody in their lives says, oh, you're such an idiot. Why did you go back? And so then they're telling themselves on top of everything else that they're stupid and they're an idiot and they're useless and worthless and no one's ever going to love them. So they might as well stay. It's just a terrible downward spiral. So in my book and also in my coaching program and masterclass, I really start with that internally toxic relationship with yourself. You have to start treating yourself and talking to yourself the same way you would treat a friend. Then we start working on calming down that emotional survival system so that we can go up into our rational mind and make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And I like to really help people understand that there are really these different aspects of your brain. And this irrational emotional survival system, it's an important system, but if you live camped there, you have no access to your rational mind. Not a good place to be making decisions from. And so when you can calm that stuff down and then use your rational mind, then you can make a good decision and also recognize that as you walk through this good decision, this is going to start going off again and really be crazy making, but you can stick to your good decision.
Yeah, I heard somebody once put it as when emotion goes up, intelligence goes down. And you just explained it scientifically. Yeah, that reptilian brain, is that the one that takes over?
The reptilian and the mammalian. So the reptilian is the survival system. The mammalian is the emotional system.
Oh, okay.
And both of those are still in the irrational realm, right? If you're just running on emotion all the time, I feel like I love that person still. I feel like I'm going to die without them. I feel blah, blah, blah. Feelings are not facts. The fact is you're not going to die without them. The fact is you are going to be okay. The fact is you're probably going to find somebody better if you give yourself the chance to heal and not make the same type of choice again. Mm-hmm. And to fully show up for yourself and then fully show up in another relationship.
And I think that is a really important principle that you just put out. It's like when we attract somebody, we attract at the level of where we are.
Right.
So, and if you want to talk about the hierarchy of needs and emotions and all these things, the higher up you go where your needs are met, your emotions are balanced, or at least you're healed from some of it and you're on your way to better, you're more likely to find somebody like that than when you were in the mindset of, well, I'm subservient, the man is all, or the woman who's going to be my partner knows more than me. You're just going to meet the same. Wherever I go, there I am, that phrase. So we need to be more of who we are, as you said in the beginning.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And when we're always going to attract, if we're giving, loving, empathic people, we're going to attract narcissists because that's
great
what they're looking
news.
For.
Thanks, Shannon.
Right. But we don't have to be attracted to them.
Okay.
That's the thing. And we don't have to accept their stuff. Okay. You know, when my late husband passed away and I was sort of newly, I wasn't dating, but everybody else thought I was. And people would show up in my life, and now I'm very happily married, but when people would show up in my life, it was so fascinating because they would be showing me all their stuff and I'd be like, interesting. Wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot
right.
pole. You know, it's like,
keep moving, nothing to see here.
And then when I met my husband, I'm like, okay, this is a breath of fresh air. Somebody who is attracted to my whole self, isn't trying to find a doormat, isn't trying to find a peacekeeper, placator person, is really in a partnership role. That's attractive to me now. Whereas, you know, when I was a teenager, the bad boy kind of looked hot. And I don't know.
No, I get the bad boy thing. It's funny how many women have said that I used to do little polls and stuff when I ran classes. And lots of women had a bad boy phase.
Mm-hmm.
Catholic school girls, especially. I don't know why you talk to my friends went to Catholic school.
And how I grew up, I was willing to accept some of that bad behavior, that moody behavior. I felt like I could calm down the anger outbursts. I felt like I could placate all the moods. And so, you know, it wasn't, people say, well, you're just comfortable with that abuse. That makes me mad and so crazy.
There's no comfort there.
Gosh, no. There is a familiarity with your role as a placator and that we get some sort of familiar kudos, if you will, from feeling like we can calm down those moods, mm-hmm. but you're not going to be able to do it forever. So it is you're chasing something that you're never going to, you know, and in a lot of ways you're chasing that initial love bombing. Mm. So these people are very good at that initial love bombing. And like you said, the chameleon, but they also kind of mirror you and kind of show up like that and make you feel like this is the best thing ever. It's you and them against the world, and you're the only one that gets them, and they're the only one that gets you. And so they start to isolate you from your people. And when you get addicted to that love bombing, then every time there's an episode, you do everything you can to get back to that love bombing. Mm. And then, so essentially they're training you, and then you're training you to be doing everything for them and placating your boots off and, you know, just doing all the things to try to get back to a shred of or a breadcrumb of that love bombing, which was never love to begin with.
Right, right. Is there, it seems to me, my memory serves, there's a dishonesty in staying in the relationship. And I'm not judging anybody. I'm, like I said, speaking from experience. And I almost feel like that's another reason to get mad at yourself. Like, I'm smarter than this. I know better than this. This isn't going to get me where I want to be in life. And yet it's hard to go. It's hard to say I'm done. And it's scary because, again, you don't know what you're facing, or you kind of do, but maybe it is going to be worse this time, or maybe you'll get kicked out because it's not your house, or yeah. Again.
And there's a whole, you know, the last third of my book and the last third of my masterclass and coaching is all about rebuilding, rebuilding your sense of self, rebuilding your network, your friendship group, your connections to friends and family that have dropped away, and your future. Like, what do you want? Re-envisioning your life. What do you want your life to look like now? Mm. Because it's probably all gone away while you're with this person. Sometimes you keep a shred of it, but oftentimes people are completely empty, emotionally, spiritually, bankrupt, even financially sometimes, yeah. depending on the person. Yeah. So it's just really critical that you take the time rather than jumping back into another relationship that you think is going to be different, is unlikely to be if you haven't done the healing for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Because they'll lead with the love bomb.
They'll lead with a love bomb. You'll accept it, and you'll lead with placating, and they'll love that. So that's the tragically perfect match.
And tell us the name of your book, please. I don't think I mentioned it.
It's Out of the Fog, Into the Clear, Journaling to Help You Heal from Toxic Relationships. So it has a lot of information that I share, and then journal prompts, and then more information, and then journal prompts. So it's very readable. That's a great collaboration or a sort of add-on if you have a therapist, but it's also designed to be something that can stand alone if you don't have access to therapy, which millions of people in the world do not. Mm-hmm. I also have a YouTube channel I started about 6 years ago just to really help share the things that I've learned with a wider audience. Again, people who are never going to have access to a therapist. And there's a lot that I have that's just information and psychoeducation that I can share, mm-hmm. Without, you know, pretending to be anybody's therapist on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And then I brought it all together into a book of healing strategies, and then started a masterclass and support group. And the small women's support group, I think, has been really key to a lot of women who are struggling with that.
If we ever need support, it's at a time like that when you're rebuilding or even getting up the guts to leave.
And staying on track.
Good people
around. Staying on track and not going back and not gaslighting yourself in a sense, because you sort of know these things and then you unknow them. Mm. You go back into the fog.
And your website is healfromtoxicrelationships.com. Mm-hmm. And you have a free 20-minute video to learn when you're with your toxic ex, how to heal from damage, and how to handle contact with your ex or other toxic people in your life. That's a great place to start for somebody that's heard this and is on the fence about what to do.
Yeah, I think it's critical because a lot of people feel like they're going crazy. Mm-hmm. And it's just that scientific fact. you feel that way because this is what's happened to you. So it isn't that you're bad, wrong, stupid, crazy. It is that this is what's happened to you, and this is a normal response to that. And I think that is such a breath of fresh air for people because they feel so broken and so empty. Mm-hmm. So when you really key into that and really stay true to who you are and what you need and what you want, you can recover.
That's
takes a different approach.
A beautiful thought for people to take with them. It's not what's wrong with you, it's what happened to you. Anything else that you'd like to share, please do.
You know, just to help people understand that this is something, it is possible to recover from this, but it isn't necessarily intuitive or easy or obvious. And so to make sure not only are you not shaming other people who are going through this, but you're not shaming yourself for having such a hard time. Like some of my clients have been out of the relationship for years and they're still struggling. They're not healing because it's not obvious and it's not intuitive what happened and how to heal it. Healing those emotional survival systems and calming all that down, it's not obvious and it's not something that you learn in school for sure.
Right.
And so it's something that people need help with and support with. And I also see a lot of family and friends shame women for going through this. And it's so critical that you non-judgmentally support women going through it.
And if people are interested in your mastermind, how would they find out about that?
That's available on the healfromtoxicrelationships.com.
Okay.
When you watch the 20-minute video and get some information on that, then there's also a Calendly link. So you can book a free session with me and see if that's a good fit for you. And then we can go from there.
Well, this has been great, Shannon, really helpful. And I appreciate your time and expertise. And I know that the women listening who might be in the situation did too.
Good.
So thank
Thanks.
You again.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're most welcome. People, I'll be back next week with another fabulous guest. Be well till next time. Hey, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed that episode, and I thank you for listening. I'd love to connect with you on social media if you happen to play over there. On Instagram and Facebook, I'm at RebelWell50. LinkedIn, of course, is my name. And on TikTok, just look for the Rebellious Wellness Over 50 page. And I look forward to connecting. You know, this is a big year of connection for us. This is how we get through tough times, is being in community with like-minded people. And if you're a listener, I believe we are.